Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back to Time for KER Politics. Starting out the show with a man who I respect immensely. His name is Alan Gottlieb. Alan has been on the show before. Alan is the founder of the Second Amendment Foundation, has some very interesting ideas. We're going to talk kind of in general for the first two segments about Alan's views on what's going on in Bellevue, Washington, and Seattle, Washington. I am absolutely appalled because common sense has run amok, to say the least. Any opinion on that, Alan?
Well, obviously, I think common sense has run amok. I got to agree with you. And with regard to the rioters and looters that we see running around the country, it surely doesn't help the situation at all. And you mentioned Seattle and Bellevue. Bellevue only had it for one night, and the police took care of the situation. Seattle, of course, is a little Looney Tunes, and yeah, things are still running wild in Seattle. What's interesting is juxtapose that with Kirkland, which sits, you know, across the lake from Seattle and right next to Bellevue. In Kirkland, Washington, a lot of armed citizens showed up to protect the businesses, and as a result, the looters ran and dispersed, and the businesses in Kirkland were not looted. And that's just one of many instances around the country where armed citizens have stopped violence from happening. And it shows, I guess it validates why so many people have run out in the last couple of months to buy firearms and ammunition, so that the record sales numbers are through the roof. And it validates the fact that, you know, guns save lives.
Yeah. You know, I agree with that 100%. Some of our listeners may have some opposing views to mine, but I happen to agree 1,000% on that particular statement. Got a comment, interestingly enough, from a listener who said, do you think this would have happened in the past in the United States? And my comment on that, Alan, was purely and simply, when the West was won, the people living in the small towns in the West would have put a stop to this almost immediately, and they would not have been politically correct. I bet you would agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with that, but this has happened in our country, you know, over the last several years. It happened when Barack Obama was president. You had, you know, riots and looting in a number of cities. So it's not totally new. A lot of this is organized by people who really don't support our way of life, our system, our freedom, our democracy, the way it exists today. They want to make America into a whole different country, and if they can't do it at the ballot box, they'll do it by rioting.
Right. Do you think they're going to be successful? Let me make a comment on that. I'm actually asking another question. Joe Biden is now the presumptive candidate, obviously, opposing Donald Trump. He's coming out with some pretty crazy ideas. He was on the record yesterday, the rioters who are engaging in illegal activity should not necessarily be put in jail, and if they are, there should be the bail situation should be non-existent, so they should simply be let go. Today he was on the record this morning as saying, in a situation like that, shoot the violent protesters in the legs. Kind of a bit of a turnaround for Mr. Biden.
Well, he's trying to say the police shouldn't shoot to kill, they should shoot people in the legs. The man is, quite frankly, not all there. If a police officer is being attacked by somebody, you shoot to defend yourself.
Correct.
Shooting somebody in the leg, if they're coming at you and they're 2 inches away from the knife, it doesn't do a lot of good shooting them in the leg. And Biden never knows what he's talking about. He doesn't know anything about firearms to begin with. You know, in the past, he talked about no one needs to own a certain kind of gun because all you need is a shotgun. You could go out on your deck and just shoot the shotgun in the air. And, you know, he goes, I have one in my house with my deck, and it scared people away. Well, you don't just shoot a gun up in the air because you have neighbors that the pellets or bullets might come down and hit.
Right.
I mean, the man, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But, you know, it's worse than him talking about saying that these looters and violent people shouldn't be put in jail. They should just be released immediately because they can't afford bail. It's like putting them in debtor's prison.
Right.
What's worse than that is he has had over a dozen key members of his staff, of his presidential staff, make donations to bail these people out of jail.
Right.
Who have gone and ransacked property, committed arson, injured people. This is just absolutely appalling.
Alan, I have to say it's worse than that in my opinion. Absolutely appalling. I know that your publicist sent me some information on your stance on certain issues, and that was very definitely one of those one of your stances, that members of his party, etc., not his party but his organization, are actually donating money to allow criminals to be released from incarceration. You know, I guess maybe I'm crazy, Mr. Gottlieb, but I got to tell you, this makes absolutely no sense in the world to me. What is in the minds of these people who feel it's okay to loot businesses that really have nothing to do with this? I don't get it. Can you explain? Maybe you can help me out.
Well, let me put my spin on it. First of all, a lot of it's organized by a small group of people that, you know, are very politically motivated. They're using this to push all kinds of, you know, social upheaval, mainly because they want to shut down the economy to help make sure that Trump can't claim that he got the economy back on track after the virus.
Right.
And therefore win a re-election. Many other people are just doing it because, hey, it's free stuff. And I hate to say it, but the Democratic Party is the party of free stuff. And they encourage this kind of behavior. And so it doesn't surprise me that they're bailing these people out of jail, or don't want them put in jail to start with. And it isn't just Biden's, you know, we talk about Biden's staff and not necessarily Democratic Party. His staff is the Democratic Party. And the reason they're doing it is basically they're pandering for certain voters that they're trying to get to pander to their base. I hope it turns off the middle in America and the middle people, you know, including, quite frankly, you know, black business people and black people who worked their whole life to get what they've got, who are now seeing it stolen from them. I mean, you're right. It makes no sense at all. It's again, I think it's deplorable.
Well, I want to get into a different subject here in the next segment. Not really a different subject, but I want to get into the issue. So I'd like you to think about this a little bit of people basically simply using common sense. And you'll see that I include your organization very definitely in that category. I think a lot of our listeners are probably not aware of what happened in Bellingham. I watched the news almost 24 hours a day when you had the disturbances up there. You had a disturbance at a bank. I believe it was the Chase Bank that never was put in the newspapers. And I think that's very indicative of how the press is not giving the full story. What happened at that bank, Alan?
Well, it was the bank, actually. I think we were referring to one in my own neighborhood here in Bellevue, not Bellingham.
I'm sorry.
But I went the other day, you know, the lobbies of the banks are closed because of the coronavirus, and you have to go through the drive-thru. I went to the drive-thru, and it was closed because there are three bullet holes put through the window of the drive-thru to the teller from the rioters. And so they had it closed down. And then I drove to another Chase Bank in Bellevue to try and make my deposit. It was closed down because its front doors were smashed down and it had to board it up. So, I mean, they love attacking banks because banks are institutions. And these rioters hate institutions. They hate everything that's built America to be great.
I'm going to get in on another subject. It's kind of an introduction to what we're going to be talking about after the commercial break that's going to occur here within less than 1 minute. It seems to me that the folks in Kirkland, Washington, just simply took matters in their own hands and stopped any violent rioting and looting. Summarize that situation as quickly as you could, Alan, would you?
Yeah, a lot of residents, gun owners in Kirkland, Washington, took their firearms on their persons and stood in front of some of the businesses and turned the looters away and saved the business from being looted. I also saw that happen in Scottsdale, Arizona, outside the fashion mall there, where armed citizens protected the businesses and the looters had to flee. And this has happened in four or five other cities as well. So it shows there's a good side of guns and they save lives and people's property. And that's why so many people in record numbers are running out to buy firearms.
We're going to talk about that, Alan, right after a real quick 30-second commercial break. Big Al's going to be right back with Alan Gottlieb.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
My discussion with the founder of the Second Amendment Fund, Alan Gottlieb. Alan Gottlieb is a very sensible individual who I adhere to his philosophy on how the situation should be terminated. The situation being illegal demonstrations, violent demonstrations, demonstrations that are resulting in physical harm to totally innocent citizens. Talk about that, would you, Alan?
Yeah, I mean, I find what's going on to be a bit appalling because, you know, ripping off people's property and hurting other individuals doesn't, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. And while I agree with the, you know, nonviolent protesters protesting some of the situations that get going on and the shooting that took place, you know, in Minneapolis, which was totally, it was appalling as well, the actions in response are equally as appalling when you get violent and destroy people's property and people's lives. You know, there was just in Iowa a situation where a young black protester was shot and killed by other protesters, you know, just because they were rioting and looting and weren't caring about human life. You know, her life is just as important as the life of the person the police officer killed in Minneapolis. You know, we've lost more lives subsequently in these riots around the country. A lot of good law enforcement people that in fact, you know, did not do anything, you know, wrong or illegal have been murdered or harmed and hurt. A lot of individuals have been harmed and hurt and killed, you know, either, you know, bricks being thrown at them. I mean, it's the point is, I don't see this. For me, you know, everybody's life is important and nobody should be mistreated. And these looters are mistreating people in greater numbers than the Minneapolis police did. Both are disgusting and wrong.
Well, unfortunately, I have to agree completely with that. I think the police officer in Minneapolis probably was in error. You don't do what he did unless there's justification for it. And given the fact that apparently that event was videoed live, apparently there was no real justification for what the guy did. But you know what? What that basically boils down to is a very, very significant mistake made by a human being. And in this case, the human being happened to be the policeman. I personally didn't see any antagonism to the fellow who was killed. Am I wrong about that?
You say antagonism to the person who was killed.
Let me stop just for a second. I didn't see any antagonism from the fellow who was killed.
Yeah, I didn't either. And what's come out is that apparently that the police officer may have known him because they may have worked together as security officers when the police officer was off duty and the other gentleman's working at a nightclub in Minneapolis. There may have been more to this that we don't know about because they may have known each other. This may have had nothing to do at all with race or anything else. It may be a personal grudge this police officer had against this person. I think a lot more information is going to come out. But the bottom line is the police officer who acted wrongly has been, you know, arrested for it and has been charged. And my guess is those charges are probably going to be even, you know, updated, made more severe. So when people want justice, we're getting our justice. But it is not justice burning down property, looting liquor stores, setting fires to places, you know, killing and harming other individuals on the street. That is just uncalled for and cannot be tolerated.
Well, you look what's going on in Seattle right now, the city of my birth and my wife's birth. I mean, it's appalling in the sense that I have children who live down there, one who lives in the heart of the city, another one who lives in Mukilteo. I'm sure you know where that is, just a little bit north of the city. And my daughters, my middle daughter has a couple of my grandsons, twin boys. She and her husband are using common sense. They are simply staying to themselves, and she has assured me that if it gets any dangerous whatsoever in their neighborhood, they are gone. They will simply leave. And I think that's how you have to handle it. Unfortunately, emotions get in the way and common sense absolutely goes out the window. Want you to do me a favor, Alan. And then I want to get into a little bit about the Second Amendment Foundation. Tell us a little bit about the Second Amendment Foundation. Sorry.
Well, we've been around since 1974. What we're most known for is our legal action, legal work in defense of Second Amendment rights. the Heller McDonald Supreme Court cases that affirm Second Amendment rights. The McDonald case was brought by the Second Amendment Foundation, and our attorney was the one who argued the Heller decision, and we filed a very important amicus brief in that case. Right now, we have about 40 cases in federal courts going on. 11 of them have been filed just in the last 2 months over the coronavirus shutdown of gun stores and gun ranges, so people couldn't buy firearms to exercise their Second Amendment rights. And in 80% plus of those cases now, we've been successful in opening up those gun stores so that people can buy firearms to exercise their Second Amendment rights. Overall, about 80% plus of the case law won in the courts defending gun rights have been won by the Second Amendment Foundation and our attorneys. So we've set the foundation for future Second Amendment litigation. We also do a significant amount of public education, research, and publishing on gun-related issues to help keep people safe and fight crime and protect civil rights.
I have to believe, and this may sound a little bit simplistic, Alan, but I have to believe that the philosophy of your foundation is purely and simply, guns don't kill people, people kill people, utilizing guns. A gun is nothing more than a tool, correct?
Well, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, a gun doesn't have a brain to hate with or a finger to pull its own trigger. There's no doubt that a firearm is a tool. It can be used for good. It can be used for evil. We need to crack down on people who use it for evil and not take away people's rights who use it for good.
You know, I have to agree with that 100%. I think, unfortunately, what's going on here is the instigation of my second biggest pet peeve. My second biggest pet peeve is that, purely and simply, people let other people affect their emotions. And people don't think with their brains. They simply think with emotions. Got less than a minute left here. Any final words, Mr. Gottlieb?
Well, let me just say that your listeners can go to the Second Amendment Foundation's website at saf.org, and take a look at all the legal cases we filed and all the releases we put out on what's going on currently in the streets of America, in the courts, and what's happening in the presidential races as well. And get a lot of information that I think, quite frankly, can frame the issue a little differently than you're getting it framed on some of the littered media networks.
I would highly recommend you folks that you do that. I'm going to take some extra time before we put the show up on the satellite, as they say, before this goes on the radio stations. It also is a podcast, as you know, from our website, www.kereport.com. We'll have a picture of Mr. Gottlieb. We'll also have a very, very obvious link that you can click on and get all of the information that you want on the Second Amendment Foundation. Please remember one thing, and that is, use common sense. For God's sakes, don't use your emotions. Use common sense. Alan Gottlieb, thank you so much, sir.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for the second half of KER Politics. Got Dr. Frieda Birnbaum on the line with me right now. Frieda is a PhD clinical psychologist, practices both in New Jersey, and then, of course, when we don't have the COVID lockdown, she has an office in downtown Manhattan. Having said that, Frieda, the first thing I want to opine on, I want to get your opinion on this, and of course I'll be happy to add, I can start out very quickly, I guess, with my opinion, and that is the African-American who was killed by the police officer in Minnesota. I know a lot of people are talking about a certain community in the United States, which primarily includes liberals, is really playing the race card on this one. But you know what? I disagree with that. And Frieda, the reason I disagree with it is purely and simply because the police officer who had his, was arrested, by the way, today, Friday, as we're recording on Friday. He did not necessarily diminish my respect for all policemen, but I would have to say he certainly diminished my respect for himself. Dr. Frieda, what do you think about that?
Yes, it's very painful to even hear you talk about this. Didn't it happen already before with Eric Garner, who was pinned down, screaming, "I can't breathe"? Again, it's happening? It's unbelievable. It's uncomprehensible that something like this could take place in our society today. What about a psychological analysis of these police officers? What about taking courses about psychology and human behavior? I think it's time that we change the system as well as we change the laws of how to handle these policemen who are in this mindset where they go to court with other officers, with attorneys, with judges, that they seem to support each other more than the victims, and the victims are further victimized. So it's very dangerous to be a black man in America. And I can't stress, you know, if I were to walk down the street, I wouldn't be arrested because of my appearance, because I wouldn't be intimidating. I'm 5'1", you know, that they wouldn't think twice. If I were to go down some dark street stairwell, they wouldn't kill me. They shot a man a couple years ago for he was African American. He was walking in the back and they got scared. These police officers are not rookies. And if they are rookies, they're not prepared to go out there and face their fears. If they're not capable of being police officers, they absolutely should not be out there in the workforce. What about these tasers that take people down without killing them? What did he have to do? What kind of vengeance did he have to reap to hurt this person in such a way, and these other police officers were watching as well? So we need new testing. We need to determine prejudices, preconceived feelings about other people. Do these police officers feel that minorities are more troublemakers? Well, guess what? They're going to stop them more often. I have a patient who is Italian, and in the summer, he gets very dark. And he stopped many times just because of his color. He did nothing wrong, but that doesn't matter. There's a fear factor that's ingrained in some people about the fact that if you're of a certain race, it could be dangerous. Not that you could be educated or a nice person. So we need to get into the communities. We need to educate more. We need more infrastructure for people to have good parental guidance, to have father figures, for a police officer to be in the communities and to get together on a weekly basis with these kids to show them that it's not being tough, because it's all not only for the students, the children, the kids, the population, but it's for the police officers to know that everyone is the same, and they don't know that. And that's where we've really gone wrong. It's not only the population who don't have the parents to guide them well often. The father's not there or is missing, and they join gangs. But it's the police officers who don't get to know these kids and understand where they're coming from. This was a young man who did nothing but listen to what he was being told. He was handcuffed at the time. And it's so painful to watch another human being. It's enough that this virus is killing us, but another human being killing someone for no reason at all in our country, the United States of America, he should really be held in prison. I feel this is just a subjective view for the rest of his life, because these police officers, and I know you support them wholly, and I know they're there for us to take care of us, but they also do make mistakes. And if they keep getting away with their mistakes, they won't be able to take themselves seriously enough. And that's really where I stand with this. And I really hope that something happens. I mean, I'm fearful for this police officer in prison. Something could happen to him that may cause his life. Who knows? But we need to justify the situation, the punishment with the crime. And we just haven't done that. And I, as someone who's never been targeted, as far as my color is concerned, I've been targeted for other reasons, knows. I know what it's like to feel that you have to lose your dignity in front of other people and to be a second-class citizen, and that's where this comes from. And in America, no one should be a second-class citizen.
Well, Frieda, the only thing that I would say right now, and then we should get on and talk a little bit about the problems that this COVID lockdown has introduced into our society, but purely and simply, the man being the police officer, made a very serious mistake, and it would appear that now he has to pay for it. Let us switch subjects, and the subject now becomes new problems introduced into our society because of the coronavirus.
Yes, you know, we have this false sense of security because we see everyone out there and everything is opening up. For some reason, other people know more than we do, but nothing has changed. Nothing has happened that's different, except the fact is that people are continuing to get this virus and they're continuing to die as well. So if we don't maintain some of this lockdown mentality, we're going to increase this wave again. And who knows what's going to happen the second time? They're finding things out now that they didn't know before. Even breathing can be a problem. 6 feet may not be far enough away. It could come through your eyes, believe it or not. You could get it again even if you got it once. You could be asymptomatic. All this that's coming out now, people are not taking into accountability. I understand that people want to get back to work. And our economy, I mean, we're talking about 36 million workers have filed for unemployment since this epidemic and lockdown. And a generous amount of monthly payment will cover the income loss for the next few months. That's right. That's what's going to happen. But we also need to look at the fact that when we go back to work and they're not asking the right questions and that you're being put at risk, you're going to have to suffer a setback in your lifestyle and you're going to be bringing back problems to your family as well. So we need to know what is the fine line between having the ability to make the right choices. When you have all the information necessary, all the new information, and you take it into your own account of your age, your background, your lifestyle, the population that you live in, all that, if you comprehend the whole thing together, then you can make the right kind of choice. But we need to see what to do when we make those choices.
You know, we really do. What's really amazing to me, and again, I've said this a million times, Frieda, and I'll say it again, and that is, I don't understand why people simply don't use common sense. And that really, I would have to say, pertains to both sides of the street. Number one, people who are not at risk and people like myself, and I have to probably say you and Kenny are at risk because of your age. I'm very definitely at risk because of my age, and I'm also, my wife is, you know, being in dialysis 3 days a week, she's very much at risk. So what do we do? We basically are aware of social distancing, and we simply adhere to it. Dr. Birnbaum, thank you so much for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, Big Al's going to be right back. KER Politics. I've got an interesting editorial here. A Lieutenant Colonel retired Jim McKinney is on the line with me. We're going to talk about what's going on right now in terms of the government, what the left is doing to totally discredit the American federal government and to basically continue on with their plan to instill what I believe is anarchy in America. By the way, I posted an editorial that was written by Mark Thiessen yesterday, Friday. You need to read that editorial because what Thiessen says, using historical facts for backup, really puts this thing into perspective. Jimmy, you're on. Let's start out with what's going on with the president.
So I think there's been a tremendous amount of media pressure and leftist progressive ideologues that have been pushing a lot of, you know, racist, you know, language towards the president and towards other people out there. But what I think is happening, what I believe is happening, is that there's a pushback against anarchy. There's a pushback against lack of control that is being driven by those same voices. And I think it's beginning to, things are, you know, this is a very, very difficult time in our country. And a lot of people do not understand the battle that we're fighting. A lot of, you know, long-term insiders in Washington are pushing back against the president in a number of ways because they don't understand the enemy. They don't understand the fight that's happening right now.
Jim, I want to branch into one other thing, and that is that I think one of the strongest arguments, anti-Trump arguments that's come out really in the last couple of weeks are some of the comments from the retired, very high-level, high-ranking military officials. I'd like you to chat about that because of those guys, one of them was a really close social friend of yours, and you personally knew all of them. What's the deal?
So I won't say a close social friend, but I will say that I worked with on a regular basis. And that was Admiral Mullins, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He was the, at the time, he was in Naples. He was the Joint Forces South Commander for NATO and American U.S. Naval Forces in the southern region of Europe's commander. I was the security assistance officer in the U.S. Embassy in Albania. We're developing a very extensive program for relationships to build, this is in 2004 to 2006, to build a partnership with the Albanians to train their military in a majority Muslim country to try to bring stability and peace into a very disrupted place. And I knew Admiral Mullins quite well. And I've worked with many of these other commanders. And of course, what we've seen right now is some of this pushback against the administration for the discussion of using the military to defend cities to stop the violence, and then, you know, personal attacks on the president. And here's what I have to say. These guys, they have depended on staffs for so long to do their work, and they're disconnected to a certain extent. They do not understand how far and what's happening with the left and the progressives and the anarchists in the United States right now. They do not understand it. They just can't comprehend it. They live inside a glass bubble inside of Washington, and they have for many, many years, if not decades. They do not understand how willing these groups are to undermine complete faith and confidence in not only the government, but in America in general. And so they're using the old rules. They're talking about like what we all want, to have this upstanding, you know, example of a leader in the White House that will keep and, you know, balance issues and keep the calm and look presidential. But the fact is, the battle is moving so much faster than they see, and they're undermining the ability to counter that. Nobody wants anarchy. Over 70% of Americans would want the National Guard in their cities tonight to stop the violence. Over 58% want the military to be involved because they don't want anarchy. And these guys attacking the president for that is actually forcing people to take issues into their own hands. By taking issues into their own hands, they're going to use vigilantism. Do we want total disintegration of civilization and civil authority in the United States? No. You've got to stop the violence. And I very much am angry with these people for stepping out and saying these without understanding the fight. They don't see the media. They don't see what the anarchists are doing out there. They're destroying everything in our communities right now. They're raping and they're pillaging. I shouldn't say raping. I don't know if that's happening, but they're definitely pillaging and looting and rioting in order to undermine faith and confidence. And it's a political objective. It's no longer just about a race war. And it's a political agenda.
Well, I have to agree 100%. You know, it's interesting, Jimmy. I was watching the Northwest News last night, and they had two major segments, one on what was going on in Bellevue, Washington, what was going on in Seattle, Washington, and what happened. Another black man was killed, apparently, in Tacoma by a police officer who did the same thing that apparently occurred with George back in Minneapolis. And my only comment on that is, of course, it's a travesty. Of course, it's very, very wrong. There's no question about that. I mean, anybody with any common sense knows it's wrong and knows that the perpetrators of those crimes, and they are crimes, need to be thoroughly investigated and, if warranted, punished. There's no question about that. But my only comment about what the mayor of Tacoma had to say goes hand in hand, Jimmy, with what Al Sharpton had to say at George's funeral yesterday. And all Al Sharpton was doing was inciting very, very negative emotions towards the white community. And I have to say, the same thing happened to an extent with the black mayor of Tacoma, Washington. The only thing that I would wish is I would wish that Sharpton and this other woman simply would come out and say, this is 100% wrong. We know that. We're better than that. We believe that the majority of police officers, the majority of white America, probably has their heart in the right place. But you know what? These people have to be, rather than fire up people as Sharpton did yesterday at the funeral, what I find to be amazing is they're not trying to do that. What kind of human being does that make these guys?
Well, that's exactly the point. If you're going to yell at President Trump for not being the moderator, not being the peacemaker, but you're going to be the one that's inciting violence against him, how does that work? You know, how is that positive for our communities? What I said before, this is politics. It's no longer about race relations. It's not about justice in our cities. Most of the cities that have had major problems are run by black leaders. They voted their own people in. They're complaining about it.
And that's okay. We do live in a democracy.
No, it's actually right. It's good. And that's what they should be focusing on, their leadership at the local level. That's how our system works. So the complaints and the problems need to be looked at the lowest level. And it's not about the national problem. And I believe people are starting to realize that. And that's one thing Trump has done. He's told the states through this COVID issue, and he's told the local governments, it's up to you to do it. We'll reinforce and we'll help. Now, with violence and you know, lack of control, if they can't manage it, and some of them are actually allowing this to be perpetuated, they're allowing this violence to go forward. And they think for some reason that this is going to benefit them. I do not understand why they, in their right mind, they think that it's going to benefit them to continue to inflame hatred and continue to support violence. And we look at mainstream media outlets and left of progressive issues like Slate Magazine, which actually says, you know, protests are good, violence is too. Those types of articles and statements, that's unbelievable from the media, but we're seeing it constantly. And it's because there's an agenda. They're willing to do anything. They have no moral values. They have no moral standing. They're willing to do whatever it takes to destroy or riot or loot in order to undermine confidence in America. And I think it's sad. And there's too many people on both sides of the aisle that don't understand that.
I agree, Jimmy. Jimmy, I got to interrupt you for a second because we're out of time here. Let me just say one thing. One of the biggest travesties that is about to potentially occur is that one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history, Drew Brees, may lose his job because of his comment about kneeling. What his comment about kneeling was, and I heard every word that he said last night, was purely and simply, I am not going to dishonor my country, and I'm sorry that people think that maybe that's what I did. Jimmy, thanks so much, bud.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.